On today's Piano Jazz, we revisit a program from the first season in 1979 when John Lewis was Marion McPartland's guest. The program begins with John Lewis playing the blues.
John, I just love the way you play the blues. I almost got into it myself. What a kick having you here on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Marion.
You know, this is the first, of course I've heard you on records recently, but this is the first time I've been with you in a playing situation since we were in Japan, I think.
That's true. I think that is the last
yes,
time.
Yes, what a kick. And, you know, listening to you play the blues, I learned so much from you over the years, of the way you play the blues, just so economical and so spare and yet so right. You know, you just started something out and just in fact, you know what I was thinking to myself? I was so tempted to get into that and play, and then I thought, well, I better not because I'll louse things up. But just do one chorus and let me just play on that a little bit.
Went to Japan together. I just about 3 weeks ago came back from Japan. We went and played. Maybe it's longer than that ago now.
Going by fast.
Yes, we took a kind of mini Monterey Jazz Festival there for 1 day. Played one concert.
For one day in Japan, boy, right. That's very jet setting. It's very chic, isn't it? Goodness, it must have been, what a trip!
It was fun though. First, he was a bass player and. Mel was the drummer. Mel Lewis was the drummer, and Kenny Burrell was the guitarist.
That's nice.
And Dizzy and Thad were the trumpet players.
Oh, goodness.
And Sonny Sitt and Benny Golson were the principal saxophone players. Then we took a young high school student from California who won this honor to go with us, and also a very nice prize from the Japanese radio station. We went there for Tokyo Broadcasting System.
What did he play?
The saxophone. He's 17 years old. He's a wonderful arranger, a wonderful saxophone player, and he's Mavis River's son. You remember Mavis River?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I saw Mavis just a little while ago when she was here with Red Norvo.
It was her son.
That's fantastic. What's his name? Gotta watch out for him.
Right. I'll have to try and remember. It was a hard name because he has his father's from the Philippines.
Yes, right.
Right.
I've got to watch out for him. Well, I'll ask Mavis next time I see her. But then that must have been, you haven't actually worked that much with Dizzy over the years since you were with him.
Let's see.
Or have you?
I, On odd occasions where we're there together, I always play with him. He makes me play with him.
I bet he does.
Anybody's in the room or anything. And I see him usually at each year at Monterey and also in Nice. I see him and I always play a set with him.
Well, when you first came to New York, wasn't he one of the first people you started playing with?
Well, that was my first kind of long-term professional job in 1946. First as an arranger for Dizzy for about 6 months while I was waiting to get my union card.
You were coming here from New Mexico?
Yes. Well, I came from New Mexico after having only been home for about a month from the war, coming from the European theater. And the reason I came to New York was mainly because of Dizzy. While I was there, Dizzy had this legendary sextet playing at Billy Berg's in Los Angeles with Charlie Parker, Milt Jackson, Ray Brown, Al Haig, Stan Levy, and himself. And it was so incredible, the broadcast I'd listened to each night from Billy Berg's, I said, well, that's it. Got afraid I'm going to have to leave home. go to New York. So I did. So I came to New York and went to school first and then was introduced to Dizzy by Kenny Clark. Kenny Clark and I were in the Army together.
Oh, really?
Yes, 2 years ago.
Well, he was your first drummer in the quartet,
wasn't Yes, because we're old friends. We've slept in foxholes, things like that together. And so he took a couple of arrangements that I'd written down to Dizzy, and Dizzy liked them, so he hired me as an arranger. I couldn't work with him as a pianist, and they were playing in the spotlight. So then he asked, and also Monk was the pianist at the time.
Monk was the pianist, right, Dizzy. Goodness.
Big band at the time. But then when they got ready to go out on the road, I started playing with Dizzy. I guess the first job I had, though, with Dizzy was Record Date, where we recorded Things to Come. That was my first job playing.
Now, I forget that one, but did you didn't record Salt Peanuts and Hot House, did you?
No, those
Wasn't
are the
that
ones
Al
that
Haig?
Were in, those were in, yeah, well, yes, some of those were Al Haig, and those are the things that were made in early in 45.
Because, you know, that was my first introduction to what I know you reluctantly call bebop. And I was in Paris at the time, and we were at Charles Delaunay's house, and Django was there. And Charles Delaunay was playing this record, you know. I can't even play it, but, you know. And I'm sitting there saying, what is that? What's happening? What's the piano player doing? And he was just going, you know, little stabbing chords. Yeah. And I remember asking this ridiculous question, does a piano player have all that written out? Can you imagine if you tried to write that out? So that was the first record that I heard. And but that, as you say, was before you joined. So you did Things to Come. And what else was on the record?
No, well, I played on that record. I think they were from Musicraft when he was recording them. Let's see, what else?
One
Bass Hit was also recorded.
Yeah.
There. This was with the big band, though, that he had then. Let's see, what else did he record? Ray's Idea was another.
Manteca?
That was later. That was in 47. These were in 46. In 47, recorded Manteca and recorded Two Bass Hit, Peace of Mind, it was called then. I've changed the name since.
Two Bass Hit?
Yes.
Was that yours?
Yes.
Now, you know, I never knew that till this minute. Now, that's a blues, isn't it? Or is it?
Well, it's kind of blues. It's some other stuff that surrounds it. In the middle, the core of it is a blues, the improvised section. Yeah.
I always get mixed up. That's something else, isn't
right?
it? Or is that yours?
No, that's not. Let's see. Two bass hit was like this.
But I'm still an ignorant Britisher.
Most knowledgeable, always catching
up, you know. Like as fast as I learned to play bebop, they changed and went to something else. I guess it would be kind of fun to explore one of those bebop tunes because most of them, I guess if not all, were taken from either the blues or a pop tune that they superimposed a melody on.
Right. In the early part, right after the war, most of the tunes were new tunes based upon older chord progressions, which is a necessary transition before you can get to new chord progressions. It's easier for the musicians to manage.
Well, what would you think with some of the, really, the earliest bebop tunes or bop tunes?
Well, that piece that you play is based upon, what is it, based on Indiana? Or
oh, the Charlie Parker's Donna Lee.
Right.
That one?
Right.
Boy, I don't know if I can get through this, but we
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.